We are joined on the line now by Rukia Lumumba, Executive Director of the People's Advocacy Institute, co-coordinator of the Electoral Justice Project. Rukia, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start by talking about this winter weather crisis that's affected Jackson. We heard about Texas all over the national news several weeks ago. Meanwhile, the people in Mississippi were suffering an unprecedented water crisis, 80 water main breaks. Can you talk about what happened in mid-February and what's happened since?
Yeah, so the day before what some people celebrate as Valentine's Day, we woke up to a winter storm where when you looked out your window, it looked like an ice skating rink all throughout the city, from the grass to the streets. All throughout it, I know I was stuck in my house. I couldn't leave. Most folks could not leave their driveways. You couldn't even pull out. And that weather only got worse as the days went by. And so where Texas had, snow, we had ice. As a result, people's electricity began to go out. The Mississippi, at worst case scenario, gets down to about 30 degrees at night. And that is only maybe a couple of times during the winter months. Normally, people here don't even own a coat. We're used to pretty mild winters, definitely weren't prepared. And so our infrastructure is not prepared for that. And so our roads aren't prepared, our piping isn't prepared, we don't have the equipment for salt trucks and things like that that most people have. And so in Jackson and the surrounding rural areas, many, many folks were just stuck. We were stuck in our homes. And then we got alerts to begin to store water to fill up your bathtub because pipes were likely going to freeze. So they told you to turn on the faucet so that it would drip. Within a day, over half the city was without water. And a good number of people were without electricity. And so immediately my organization, with the help of the amazing leadership of Valencia Gunder with Smile Trust and the Movement for Black Lives, really pulled together, and along with Mercedes Fulbright, who was suffering out in Texas, she was going through the same thing herself and was out without electricity also. We pulled together and began to pull together a major wellness check operation across Mississippi and across Texas, where we had over 700 volunteers that began to call residents and see how they were doing and what they needed. From that, here in Mississippi, what I was able to do was pull together organizations, grassroots organizations that I knew were responsive to community needs. And so began to pull together folks like Mississippi Poor People's Campaign and local small organizations like Operation Good and organizations that were also serving rural communities. And so we became our own first responders. And so about 2 days after the storm, those of us who had four-wheel drive began to get in our coats, and began to get heaters to people who needed heaters, because people literally were without heat in this freezing cold weather. We began to get reports from inside the prisons, that the prisons were without water and without heat. And so we began to call the commissioner, the prison commissioner, and demand that some relief be brought to folks who were inside, who were locked inside of these cages. And then we began to really organize to get people food, to get water, and to get heaters. And it was a very hard thing to do because there was literally nothing open. Our highways were shut down. You couldn't enter Jackson. You couldn't, so that meant trucks couldn't enter. That means that so shipments of water and other necessities that would normally come to stores, you couldn't get it. We also saw that we couldn't, we could not access even days after that as the weather continued to be bad. So this is now a week. What we saw is that as the ice began to melt, right, we saw pipes began to burst. And then this is when the devastation increased, right? And so we'd already seen so many families stuck without water, without electricity. When electricity began to be restored about a week after when people's when ice began to melt. We then began to experience flooding. People's pipes were bursting in their homes, homes flooding. We saw whole communities, whole neighborhoods just continue to be without water. 2 weeks passed by, and I hadn't even realized that 2 weeks had gone by, and we still were not with water. Even in my house, we didn't have a full stream of water. Still couldn't take a shower. But we had been out in the community distributing to everybody we could. We had volunteers that were calling every store in the radius upon which we could get a truck there to pick up some water, a pickup truck to get there to pick up some water so that we could take it to residents that we knew were without. And so it wasn't just our organization at the People's Advocacy Institute. It was literally a strong grassroots community effort to save ourselves. And we had a lot of support from the mayor's office, but what we lacked was support from the governor. Not only in Jackson, but in rural communities like Rolling Fork, where within the first night of the winter storm, they saw three elders die of hypothermia. We saw in places like Greenville, Mississippi, which is in the Delta, to places like Port Gibson, Mississippi, and Alcorn University, where students for 3 days were left without heat, water, and couldn't and no food. And so we were able to galvanize folks to get them food and water and snacks until their water reserve was able to be refilled. So we saw great devastation, and we continue to see water issues and have a significant water crisis for a total of almost 5 weeks. We were just taken off of a boil water notice on last week, Thursday.
Wow. And I wanted to ask you about the governor. You mentioned his lack of response, and I wonder if you could talk about how this crisis has really brought out some of the implicit and explicit racism against the city's Black leaders, particularly by people like Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves.
Yeah, absolutely. Tate Reeves did not move to do anything for Jackson until he was called out by residents of Jackson and by our mayor. And it was a willful and intentional neglect of the capital city and of rural communities that pretty much were Black-led under Black leadership and or had majority Black populations and brown populations and indigenous populations and or poor populations. And so when we talk just about Jackson, because I think it is a prime example of this willful neglect, it was 3 weeks in before the governor actually even agreed to send the National Guard to bring water tanks to help fill up our water resource, our tanks here. And it wasn't until another week after that the governor finally called for FEMA and the Red Cross to come in to assist residents here. And we're still waiting on some of that support. And so it can't be more clear. It can't be more clear. Ever since Jackson's leadership about 20 to 30 years ago became Black, when we had our first mayor, the divestment from the city by the state has been significant. It has been one in which not only we've seen our water infrastructure woes just increase, and every administration has asked for support with our water infrastructure. The Lumumba administration has pushed last year for support for water infrastructure, and the governor vetoed it last year. And then this year, after this water crisis, again, asked for immediate support as well as additional support to cover the cost that we had asked for last year to just help fix our over 130-year-old infrastructure problem. A lot of the problems dealing with this water predated any Black administration. And the governor will like to say, oh, you know, this leadership and other state legislators like Cindy Hyde-Smith will say, oh, this leadership, this Black leadership, won't say it's Black, but he'll say the current leadership and leadership in the past 20 years has done nothing to fix Jackson's water infrastructure. And that is a downright lie. It is untrue. Every administration has asked for support from the state to support our water infrastructure. During my father's administration in 2014, the late Mayor Chokwe Lumumba, he, against his own belief, moved to pass a 1% sales tax that would give $13 million every year to Jackson to help deal with this $2 billion water infrastructure issue. And so a consistent effort has been had by folks over and over and over again. And so the governor was forced. I think the national attention that many of you all have been able to put on this issue wouldn't allow for this to happen anymore without someone speaking up and him having to move.
Wow. And I wonder if you see parallels between what Jackson is facing now and the water crisis in Flint, Michigan in 2014, when an emergency manager over the city, unelected, decided to criminally neglect the Black and Brown communities and their water supply there.
What we're seeing in Jackson is definitely what we've seen across the nation. In terms of Flint, where they completely neglected the water system and the purity of it for decades and continue, from what I understand, that situation still hasn't been fixed. They still haven't improved the piping. And I think folks, you know, when we don't hear about it often, we forget that the problem still exists. But from folks I know out in Flint and who are organizing, they say that it still does, where neighboring places like Lansing has received funds to redo their entire piping system and did. In Jackson, what we see is a willful attempt by the state to not do enough, to do bare minimum at this point because of this water crisis. And it is harmful. And what it helps us realize is that not only do we have to pressure the state for the resources we deserve, but we also have to create our own solutions. That in every instance where we have been in a crisis in Mississippi and specifically in Jackson, we've always been our own first responders. We have consistently had to save ourselves. And so we're looking at how do we create the local infrastructure that allows us to respond to additional disasters that we know are going to happen, additional crises. Climate change is only improving, and we know it's only getting worse. And unless we create the proper ways to protect ourselves, we're going to find ourselves back in this situation or in a worse situation. So with our water, you know, we need to figure out how do we not just rely on the state to provide those resources. Yes, we are pushing the state. They have to give us what we need, but we know that that is not enough, because we know that the state of Mississippi is not one that understands the importance of climate justice, environmental justice, and the need to prevent climate change from getting worse. We know that. So we know that we, as we push them, we also have to create the solutions within our own communities on a hyper-local level. So that's where we are beginning to focus a lot of energy, and we've are participating in the Gulf Coast for Green New Deal, led by the amazing Colette Pichon Battle, and we'll also be participating once it's fully launched in the Red, Black, and Green New Deal that Valencia Gunder and Colette are leading with the Movement for Black Lives.
That's great. And if people want to help, want to get involved in the work that you're doing, what's the best way for people to help and support your work?
Thank you so much. If folks are interested, please visit us on our website, Peoples, with an S, advocacyinstitute.com, and that's Peoples, with an S, advocacyinstitute.com. As soon as you go there, there's a pop-up link asking you to donate, and or you can send resources. We want to make sure that every vulnerable community here in Jackson and in areas that are Black, Brown, and poor have the resources that they need to withstand a storm. We want to make sure that people have preparedness kits, disaster preparedness kits. We also want to make sure that we're being creative and innovative and solution-driven in terms of ensuring that we are not in a situation where we don't have water again.
Again, we've been speaking with Rukia Lumumba, Executive Director of the People's Advocacy Institute, and that website, again, peoplesadvocacyinstitute.com. Thank you so much, Rukia, for joining us on KBOO today and continuing the legacy of your father's work, the late Chokwe Lumumba, there in Jackson, Mississippi.
Thank you so much, and thank you to everybody who's listening. We appreciate you.
This is Jenka Soderberg reporting for KBOO Radio.